Thank you. Thanks, Tanya, and thank you everybody for being here. I'm very excited to facilitate this session with you and Kate Dixon. I'm going to introduce Kate and then have her basically do what she does and have an amazing session today and really talk about a lot of what's in. I actually have her book, like Name Your Price, here with me as far as really thinking about how consulting services or anything, how services are priced, or any questions that you have around compensation. And she is a pro. I actually, to full disclosure, worked with Kate when we worked together at Nike many, many years ago. Since then, Kate has a very, very successful practice, B Corp consulting company, where she does leadership development and compensation consulting. And Kate has, in my mind, she's always a really open to share any of her learnings around her field. And I've actually did some work out of this book personally to help me and my consulting company. So that's why I always felt it was a really great conversation that we're going to have today. So the way that we'll do this is if I will moderate the chat. And but Kate will be really talking to you about any questions that you might have around the topics that she'll discuss. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Kate, and welcome and thank you.
Well, thank you. And I'm super excited to be here. And Julian and I had a conversation a few months back, and we were talking about, how I could get more involved with the community and everything. And then I don't know, we were on some tangent. I was talking about what I do, and he's like, "Oh, let's talk about that at one of our sessions." So I volunteered to do an Ask Me Anything session. What I thought we would do today is start. We've got a little poll for you on some topics that I typically talk about around pricing, hourly rates, and that kind of stuff. So if Tanya, can you put up the poll for everyone? And if you could like just check which one of these topics you'd like to start out talking about, that would be great. I have some slides that I use sometimes, but we can start out with that. We can and we'll have plenty of time for lots and lots of questions. So please put something, check something in the poll. And if you have a topic that you'd like to cover that's not listed here, let's put it in the chat.
All right, we had one that eked out here in the last few seconds as the majority winner, but a couple of close ones. I'll go ahead and share.
Creating packages. Yay. Okay, that's super fun. Well, let's, I'm going to go ahead and navigate to that part in my deck. And share my screen. So let's just start here. So packages, I mean, we're used to buying a lot of services and packages, and thanks to our friends in software as a service, this is a very common thing. But what I thought I would do is share kind of my thinking around how to create value-added packages, what to include, and then I'll show you an example of something that I actually use in my practice. So things that I would recommend that you include when you're figuring out your packages is, what are they going to get? So how much time with you? So like one of the things that I do a lot of is one-on-one coaching. So I do salary negotiation coaching, I do pricing coaching, like this stuff that we're probably going to be talking about today. I do executive coaching. So when I'm putting a coaching package together, I'm thinking about, well, how many sessions, coaching sessions do they get? So how much time do they get with you? If you are creating a package that has a community component, what kind of time will they have with other people? So Another thing that I do is I have a course that I run on Name Your Price, which is the topic that we're talking about today. And when I do that, it's like, okay, everybody gets a one-on-one session with me. Everybody gets, you know, time as a community because we're going through the class together. And then, you know, think about any tools or assessments that you're going to offer. When I do coaching, I always offer the Colby A index. I'm a complete sucker for that. And we'll talk about that all day long if you let me. But, you know, if you have any quizzes or things that help people understand where they are in their process, if you offer a book or a resource, be thinking about all of those things, because all of those things are worth something. They're of value to your potential client. And then also think about what you want to name stuff. And don't name it, you know, the pay as you go plan, because that's not, you know, that doesn't get people excited about it. You want it something a little bit marketing-y. My tagline for my business is accelerating leadership results. So my coaching packages tend to have things that evoke speed or progress, things like that. So that's what they get. And I think most people are, you know, okay, I know how to put that together. The piece that I see a lot of folks missing is the benefits. So what they get are the features. That's the features of what you're getting. The benefits are what happens when you answer the question, and this is so great because, right? So if you get coaching sessions with me, this is so great because it'll help you center in on what you really want from your salary negotiation. And I will give you all of the tools and scripts that you need to be successful, right? This is so great because is why this matters to your client or potential client. So, you know, spend some time with that. And then the last piece is something that, again, I think gets overlooked a lot. Make sure that you're really spelling out the terms. And what I see a lot of times is things that make us craziest about our clients tend to be things that we haven't spelled out in our terms. So, you know, things like a cancellation policy, which I had to learn the hard way to put into my my consulting proposals. But, you know, what kind of a time period? So if you're offering an executive coaching package, for instance, what, you know, you may offer a 6-month package that has up to 12 sessions, right? And the time period is important for a number of different reasons. One, it allows you to put kind of a bookend on the engagement. And it also makes it so that your clients can't just like drib drab your stuff and have this open obligation from you to offer coaching until eternity ends, right? You know, I had one client who really, you know, she did a lot of travel and all this kind of stuff. She signed up for a 6-month package. She could not get her, you know, she just couldn't get her act together to do all the 12 sessions. But, you know, we had that end date. Now, I did extend it a couple of weeks in order for her to finish up her sessions. But if you don't have an end date, you don't have a time period specified, it's pretty easy for folks who are not like super driven to completion to have that, you know, oh, well, I have, you know, 2 sessions left, so I'm going to do 1 next March and 1 in October. Well, you know, you don't know what you're going to be doing in March and October of next year. Maybe you do, but I don't. So, you know, I don't want things hanging out that long. The next thing is a guarantee. I love putting guarantees into all of my packages. And people are like, oh gosh, you know, I don't want to have to give people their money back. Well, you know, if you have a 30-day money back guarantee, There are a couple of things that that does. One is that it removes friction from the buying experience, which is your goal as somebody who's selling stuff. You want to make it easy for them to pay and feel good about paying. And if they're like, hey, if things don't work out in 30 days, I'm gonna get my money back, that makes it easier for me to buy. Awesome. I personally, in all the years that I've been doing this, have never had anybody want to do the money back guarantee thing for me, because I do a lot of work on the front end in terms of making sure we're a good fit. But if they wanted their money back after 30 days, I would want to give it to them because it probably wouldn't be a match. And, you know, that's a cost of doing business. So put a guarantee on there. It's just one of those things that will likely not ever cost you anything, and if it does, you're going to want to pay it. And I don't have, you know, like for a 6-month package, I don't have a money back guarantee that you can get your money back anytime, because after they've used the coaching services over the course of 6 months, you know, they've actually used that service. So I don't want to give their money back, right? So 30 days, that works out great for me.
Hey, Kate, and there's a couple of questions before you just get to the pricing.
Yep.
I think you referenced an index early on as far as the leadership index. What was
yes,
that?
The Kolbe, it's Kolbe. Kolbe, and it's an assessment about how people solve problems. And I use it instead of any of the Jungian based psychology ones, you know, so I don't use Myers-Briggs or DISC or any of that kind of stuff, because for me, and you know, again, no shade on anyone else, because I know a lot of consultants use those and are very successful with them. But for the clients that I work with, the thing that I love about Kolbe is that there's no right answer. So it's, you know, when I use DISC, I always felt like the underlying subtext was, you know, if you are a D, then you are a leader. And if you're not a D, you're going to be working for a D, you know, and I don't subscribe to that. I think you can lead from any seat. And I think, you know, for me, the Kolbe A index, allows people to see their problem solving gifts and how they can apply them. And, you know, again, if you want to talk about Kolbe,
you could talk that offline. Sure.
Yeah.
And so the next comment about, hey, so what are your thoughts about money back versus paying for work done to date?
Yeah. I think this is a distinction for me. So I offer money back guarantees, you know, that 30-day thing for my individual coaching packages. I don't do it in salary negotiation because we're typically doing it within a 30-day thing. But for my longer, you know, 6 and 12 month packages and stuff, I do offer that, and I'll give them the whole thing back. If, you know, in the first 30 days, they're like, ooh, this is not working for me. Paid for money or for work done, that would come into play in the way that I work, that would come into play with some of my consulting engagements. So if, you know, I have it written into my consulting agreements that either party can terminate the agreement within 30 days, and basically that I will bill them for the work that has been completed, and it becomes due right away, and then that they wouldn't get paid for anything that hasn't been completed yet. So that's that. To me, those are two separate things.
Mm-hmm.
So hope that makes sense.
Totally. Thank you.
And then, you know, the last thing that I would want you to put on to your package communications that you do is pricing. And, you know, again, I think it's important for people to see the price. There's a school of thought that, you know, don't share the price until after they know the value. And I kind of get that. And I for my salary negotiation coaching stuff, I publish my pricing on my website because I was having a lot of looky-loos, and then, you know, they get on the phone with me and they'd be like, well, you shouldn't be charging that much. It's like, I'm not here to argue about my pricing. My pricing is what my pricing is. And if that's not going to work for you, that's okay. It's totally okay. But, and I have a whole, you know, vertically integrated list of things that people can, you know, interact with me without buying a one-on-one package. So I have free articles on my website. I have, you know, low cost tools that's available on a career search website. I have my book. I have an online course, and then I have the one-on-one coaching. So I have a pretty vertically integrated offering from a salary negotiation perspective. So anyway, but you don't have to publish your pricing if you don't want to. It's totally fine. I don't publish it for my executive coaching because that's a little different, and I modify the offerings in some cases. So let me just show you one that okay. I have.
Before we go there, Kate, I think there's a couple questions here. I just want to pause just real quick. So have you found that there's a willingness potentially to pay a higher price that comes from the money back guarantee? Do you?
My guess is that yes, that, you know, knowing what I know from consumer behavior. Yeah. I think they're willing to, you know, do that, knowing that if it doesn't work out, then they can get their money back. But, you know, I haven't really tested that assumption. I do know that it makes it easier for people to say yes, just like taking credit card payments, and people are like, oh my God, it costs 3% to take credit cards, blah, you know, and I get that. And when you're working one-on-one with somebody, you want to make it easy to do business with you. And for me, one of the things that makes it easy for people to do business with me is being able to just like throw it on their credit card and, you know, pay online. They don't have to think about it. It's just like, boom, and it's done. I want it to be easy for them to pay, right? If you think about Amazon, Amazon's like the brilliant genius of this, the one click thing. Oh my gosh, how many books have I bought on one click? Because it's just like, boop, and it's done. And I don't have to get out my credit card. I don't have to do anything. It's like, it's so seamless. It's so frictionless. And, you know, for people who say, I don't want to pay the credit card prices, I want to charge them for that, just make it kind of part of your pricing. And, you know that you're going to have to pay an extra, you know, $20 or $30 to process this transaction if they use a credit card. So make your prices higher. And then if somebody pays you in a different way, you know, via bank transfer or whatever, so much the better. Now, you know, once something gets above $10,000, I don't do credit card, but, you know, again, we can talk more about that too.
Okay.
So let me show you one of these things real quick, and then we'll get to more, you know, more questiony questions. And this is just like there's more stuff that comes below this too. But again, you know, I've got my, you know, silly little package names, right? And so 180 refers to, it's a 6 month, you know, 180 day package. 360, it's a year long thing, right? And I put my pricing in here, you know, what are we trying to accomplish with this package? Here's the time thing. Here's what they get. And this is a you know, for corporate sponsored packages, I do things a little bit differently if it's just somebody who's one-on-one coming to me. And then, you know, I do these custom packages if they want, you know, if they have their own 360 or whatever. I also have some add-ons. So I'm, in addition to being Colby certified, I'm Hogan certified. So sometimes I'll do, you know, if they want to do a Hogan, I can do a Hogan with them. if they want to do 360 interviews and that kind of stuff, I have an add-on that they can add on to any of these packages as well. So that's kind of what, that's the first page. And then the second page, and I just pulled this from, I just presented this at a Colby consultants meeting, but this is kind of the, you know, the benefits, right? So the focused intake survey, so that is a feature. And then the benefits, this is so great because, right, you know, the client will respond to the survey so that their coach can better understand the client's individual goals and hopes for the engagement, right? So that's kind of the features, right? And
hey, Kate, so mm-hmm. I think, sorry to interrupt. I'm keeping interrupting you because we're getting some great questions in the chat. There's a stream starting here about the value and how you can, you know, speak to examples of value added packages, you know, for large projects, you know, as far as if somebody doesn't have the itemized services, is it like different from a fixed price proposal? So, you know, there's a lot in there, that question, but.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing, 'cause I think we're kind of at the end of what I was going to show you on value added packages. We can come back to this stuff if we want later.
Yeah.
But, there we go. so, you know, again, when I think about packages, and there are a lot of things that I do similarly in my value added packages that I also do in my proposals, right? Yeah. So proposals are what I do for my larger, you know, B2B engagements, right? Okay. Most of the packages are, you know, B2C, business to consumer. So, you know, I'm selling to individuals typically, although, you know, with this, the coaching package that I just showed you, those are for corporate engagements, but
yeah,
you know, I think the thing that is important in both of those is, you know, the idea of value is derived from the, and this is so great because it's really the benefits. It's not the features, right? So, you know, we're going to do stakeholder interviews. Great. And, you know, everybody's like, okay, yeah, you're going to talk to seven, you know, up to seven people. Well, why is this so important to the project? And what is it going to do for you? This is so great because it helps us engage with the project and have insights from key stakeholders, right? And shape the design of the program based on what we've heard. And so I try to use kind of this features and benefits, which is the super marketing thing, but I try to use that in all of my service design, whether it's a proposal or it's a package. Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. And Sue or Bruce, just let me know, like chime in too, if you kind of need some clarity on the questions that you've asked in the chat as well.
I'll jump in that I more and more don't like that I usually charge hourly rates or daily rates or that kind of stuff. And I say, what difference is it making to have me involved? So that includes, you know, the direct impact I might have on a client or an individual or group or whatever. It's also indirect impacts that they may perceive as useful or not. And I struggle with how to price that. Then, you know, that simplicity goes away so quickly. But I'm just curious if you, Kate, or others have found good, clear ways to do that. Or another way I put it is connecting my value to their the things they put on cards called values. Mm-hmm. Do their values get carried out because of my work? And then how do I charge for that fairly?
Yeah. Well, so one of the things that I do is I use my clients' words to help tell that story. So one of the practices that I have is that at the close of every engagement, I ask my clients to complete a survey. It's relatively short, takes probably about 10 minutes, but it's got net promoter score on there. But I've got a number of questions on, you know, what kind of a difference did this make for you? And, you know, what did you find the most valuable part of this? And there are things that that are really obvious, right? That, you know, yeah, I'm a compensation consultant. So now that they have numbers, yeah, you know, but there are also things that they say that about the value that they got from our engagement that weren't obvious to me, right? It's like, wow, this helped us quiet our internal strife, right? Our organizational thrash, right? Wow, that's pretty awesome. But and you know, when I think about it from my corporate days, yeah, of course that is true. But it's not just something that I would think of. So, you know, ask your clients to help you articulate what that value proposition is.
Perfect. Great. I think one of the things, Kate, that I struggle with, and I can just be completely honest, is, and Bruce, you mentioned it too, is like the hourly versus just the overall rate. Like, how do you even start to think how to shift from that thinking as far as here's my rate as I go forward in this project and I've priced it out versus giving them a complete estimate, you know, of here's the cost of this project. And there's knowing that it's going to change. I struggle with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, me too. And you know, in my conversation with Cynthia yesterday, I was like, oh, this is, I'm in my 12th year of doing this work. And mine, you know, has been bifurcated into two sections. I had a consulting practice when my kids were little, and now I have one now, and I'm going into my 7th year. So it's something that I've thought about a lot, but and after this many years, I'm pretty good at estimating how long something's going to take in terms of, you know, my time, investing my time, how long over the course of months, although sometimes that shifts based on the organization. So I'm pretty good at estimating, and you're going to have to make some mistakes in estimating before you kind of nail this down. And I'm not always right. So I had an executive compensation project that was really small, and I didn't bid a ton of money for it because it was really small and it was really straightforward. And then they decided to establish a compensation committee. And so this scope kind of grew. And, you know, I'm one of the things that I do too is I try to anticipate, you know, what's in the box and what's out of the box too. So to make sure that people know that it includes this, it does not include this, right? And again, 95%+ of the time, I'm able to then have a conversation if the client wants to expand the scope beyond what was originally in the proposal. And again, you know, getting good at proposals and being specific about the deliverables that you're going to offer helps in this process as well. But you know, when the client wants to expand the scope, which I always love because that means that they are liking the work that we're doing together, then I can point back to, hey, this is not included in our original proposal. Would you like me to write up a proposal for this, you know, additional mini project? And, you know, that's how I typically handle that. But again, you know, being specific about what you're delivering and in, you know, I mean, you don't want to spend a lot of time belaboring, I'm not doing this and I'm not doing this and I'm not doing this and I'm not doing this. But, you know, a briefly worded, not included in this, you know, are blah, blah, and blah, you know, that really helps.
I think the second selected most popular one, Tanya, was proposals, right? Did that come in second?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Kate, I think, I don't know if you have any, Craig, thank you. Scoping is very important. If you have information in the deck that you had as far as proposals, I think that would be, or if any other information that you wanted to share with regards to proposals.
Let me, let's go back to me sharing my screen.
Great.
And I will, let's navigate over to that because I think that's, it's next. Look at that.
Yeah.
You know, again, I've been doing this for a really long time and I feel really confident about the way that I do proposals now. I always include some sort of a brief about what the client is hoping to solve. And I do that for a couple of different reasons. One, they want to know that you have heard them. And so this is a really important piece as you're doing your, you know, get acquainted call or clarity call or whatever it is when you're taking in, you know, doing an intake call with a client. You know, really try to get as much information about the problem that they're trying to solve as you can, right? And so, you know, this is going to go right up front. You know, this is the situation. This is the problem that the client is trying to solve. And, you know, this is in general, in a couple of sentences, how I'm going to recommend solving that problem, right? So that's the brief. And then, you know, again, this is very similar to the package stuff. So what do they get, right? And I, you know, do very specific deliverables around, you know, I'm thinking about a project that I'm working on right now. And there's, a phase where we do background research. And then, you know, what's included in that? Well, we're going to look at this and we're going to collect this and then we're going to, you know, analyze this. So that's kind of that background frame up. And then we're going to do gather stakeholder insights. And that's going to include a custom survey and interviewing up to 7 people. That's kind of my magic number that I've landed on after a lot of years, but you can say as many as you want. But I always like to say up to blank number whenever I'm doing stuff like this, just so they understand kind of like, okay, well, if we have 7 interviews and you decide that you want to do 20 more, that's awesome. That's great. That's beyond what we have in the proposal. Let's add you a mini proposal to accommodate that. If you want to add that, right. Be clear about what those limits are. And then there's a design phase and then there's a, launch planning phase. And then there's a launch, you know, that's a typical way that I, you know, will work with clients. And so, you know, what's included in all of those things. And, you know, again, there's some wording that I use around, you know, why this is an important thing to do. This is so great because, so the deliverables, that's a big piece, right? The time frame, this is important. So they get a sense for, you know, how long is this going to take? One of the things that I'm very cautious about, especially with clients that I haven't worked with, is basically, instead of saying, you know, we're going to have this completed by December 31st, I don't know with a new client how long it's going to take them to work all this stuff through their legal department and get me my NDAs and all of this kind of business. So what I do is I typically will frame it up in terms of like week 1 through 4, week 2 through 8, you know, that kind of thing, so that, you know, it doesn't really matter when we start. This is kind of about how long I like to do it. And yes, this is definitely one of those things that I had to learn the hard way. I'm dealing with a potential client right now who wants something done by the end of the year, and they just cannot get this stuff signed. So you know, another thing to do here, it, you know, to really kind of put some braces around it is make sure that they know that the proposal pricing is good for 30 days or whatever you want it to be, because, you know, again, things could change, and sometimes they want to sit on it and they wind up sitting on it for 90 days or whatever, and you've already changed your pricing, and, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to give them the old pricing because they sat on your proposal for 90 days? No, you want to give them the new pricing. And if you put that protection in there, it's pretty easy to do.
It's interesting. Yeah. I just recently, had a client who came back after I submitted a proposal and said that their scope had changed, and actually they added to it. So they were nice enough to let me know ahead of time that, yes, we like this, and there's this other piece of work coming as well. So I think that it was very nice of them to do it while we were in the proposal stage versus after having signed something. Yes. Yeah.
This piece on resources, I think, is important, because this is one of the places that I, you know, I have kind of a standard page that I put into my proposals, and I do my proposals in PowerPoint now. I used to do them, you know, it was like a very long kind of white papery thing, you know, that was usually about 3 or 4 pages. Now I do it in PowerPoint. That's how my clients consume information from me in general. So I convert better. By the time I'm writing a proposal, you know, for me, I feel like I should have pretty much a 90% chance of getting the gig, because I'm screening them out. They're screening me out early on in the process. But resources is an important piece of it, because I let them know that, you know, here's what I'm responsible for. Here's what you're responsible for. So like scheduling, you know, meetings and, you know, determining the project team, you know, and I also, you know, with projects like the ones that I work on, which I think are probably similar to the ones that you would work on as well, I like to have status update meetings every week. And, you know, that's what I talk about in the resources thing as well. Just to kind of set the stage and, you know, create some expectations that of how we're going to act with each other, right? On terms, I put my payment terms on here, and I do things a little differently depending on the size of the contract. Most of my contracts are pretty sizable, you know, I would say, you know, 30,000 and greater. So my payment terms are 30% upfront, and the remainder is billed monthly over the number of months that we expect to be engaged. So if it's a thing that we start in October and we're planning to go for 8 months, then they pay 30% upfront and then 10% per month for, you know, the remainder of the gig. with ones that are smaller, sometimes I'll do 50% up front and 50% at the end of the, you know, at completion. You can do whatever you want. You know, I put the 30% up front so that I could negotiate it down to 20% up front, because I'm okay with that as well for these big projects. I don't get much pushback. There are a couple of companies that want to do pushback, and that's fine. I mean, I have room in there so that I can get my 20% up front, but most of them will give me the 30% up front. And I think it's important to get payment up front before you start working, because you want to create that urgency in them to move the project forward, but you also don't want to be working for free. So I do recommend that you don't start work until you have that, you know, check or bank transfer or whatever that you have in your bank. So cancellation.
Sorry, that's a practice I started to see more and more. So I think that's a really positive thing and companies expect that. I think people and companies hopefully expect that. We got a real quick note here from about an interest to see that proposal in PowerPoint, because knowing all of us that work in Word documents and are on that 10th or 15th page of the proposal, would appreciate maybe seeing a different version if you have that to share.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that on a different meeting, because sure. I would
want sure. yes. to yeah.
you know, scrub it and make sure that it's, you know, helpful for you. But I'm happy to yeah, show it.
That'd be great. Thank you.
You know, on the payment terms thing too. So I've worked with very large companies as well as the smaller companies. I find that the smaller companies are better about paying me what I want when I want it. The larger companies, you know, you basically go into their machine, right? And so one very large company that I've consulted with had, you know, you comply with their payment terms, and that's how that works, right? And the way that they have it set up is that you get, you know, the way that I normally have my stuff set up is net zero. So I give you the invoice and you pay it right now. That's how I like to work. But, you know, with these very large companies, a lot of times they'll do, you know, net 45. And if you want to get paid in 30 days, then you take a 3% discount. And so, you know, again, just like credit card stuff, if you are in a situation like that, build it into your pricing. Know that, oh, okay, well, it's going to be a $10,000 gig with this company. They have this weird thing, and I want my money as fast as I can get it, which is 30 days. So I'm going to add another 5% for making me mad for charging me the 3%. So that's kind of how I handle that. Cancellation terms. This is a hard one that I have learned the absolute hard way. I had an all day team building session that I had done all this planning for and acquired all sorts of materials for. And at the time, I did not have cancellation terms in my contract, and they canceled, I think it was 15 hours before this all day session. Luckily, I wasn't physically having to travel and into another location, but I was like, oh crap, what do I do? Well, what I do now is I have a very specific cancellation thing for any sessions like this. And it's, you know, if you cancel within, you know, 30 days, you only owe me so much. If you cancel within 2 weeks, you owe me the whole thing. And, you know, again, if you want to see like an actual example of cancellation terms and stuff like that, we can absolutely do that. I don't have it at my fingertips right now, but, yeah, we can do some of those things later. Revisions, you know, this is another one where I say, you know, up to two revisions, especially if we're doing, you know, creating training materials or communications or any of that kind of stuff, which I very frequently do as a part of my stuff. So I'm very clear about that. And, you know, one, it gets them off the dime and, you know, they know that they have to be focused. So that works really well. And they also know that if they want to edit ad nauseum, which most of my clients don't want to do, but there are a couple, right? Then they get to pay for that privilege, and that's fine. You know, the contracts, the way that I set things up now, I have kind of a master agreement. It's, I call it a consulting agreement, but it talks about, you know, that I'm going to keep everything confidential, that I'm not going to do any work that would be normally done by attorneys or securities folks and stuff, because I work in compensation. It's important for me to kind of, you know, set that stage that, you know, and then I have a thing that I talk about, you know, I'm a consultant and what you do is up to you. I'm going to give you advice and whether or not you take it is your business, right? I write out a lot nicer than that. So that's kind of, you know, indemnity, I have insurance, blah, right? So that's what goes into that master consulting agreement. And I generally make that for about a year. And then I have an addendum that I do that specifically, you know, spells out the deliverables and the pricing stuff on that. And that way, you know, because a lot of my clients, I'll go in and I'll do one project and they're like, oh, well, why are you here? Can you do this thing and this thing and this thing, which is great. And I love that. So this makes it so that we don't have to go through the master agreement more than one time a year. And then we can just do the addendums for any, you know, project or mini project or whatever. It's a lot easier. So that's how I handle it. And if the company wants you to sign their contract, which I have several clients who wanted to do that. And the first time it happened to me, I freaked out because I was like, I hate the terms that are in here. Cause a lot of them talk about, hey, when you do stuff with us, we own all the IP and we can sell it if we want. And that's not how I want to do business. So, what I discovered is they expect you to, you know, redline the contract. And so anytime I get those, I have my attorney look it over and, you know, cross through the stuff that we don't like or reword it to so that it protects my intellectual property and, you know, stays within the boundaries of good business practices for me. Because those contracts that a company is going to give you are protecting them. So NDAs, it's pretty normal for the kind of work that I do, and I'm sure the kind of work that you all do as well, to have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. I put some language around that in my master consulting agreement, just because I think it's important that they know that I'm going to not blab all their salary data to everybody in the world. And I have that kind of stuff in my coaching agreements as well, but, and that's sufficient for a lot of my clients. They just need to know that I know that I'm not going to be able to blab stuff. Right. But some companies want you to sign their NDA and, you know, again, that's something that your attorney can help you with. So I'm going to stop sharing.
Hey, Kate, before you stop sharing, because I noticed that you had a section on hourly rates. And I know that as a practitioner, you know, sometimes I struggle with how much like my value is. I know like any words of wisdom there, because there's a couple things that you had in there with hourly rates and raising prices, because I personally have a range. I have a range based on a nonprofit rate, for example, and a for-profit rate. So, any good words of wisdom there as far as pricing?
Well, really, let me start out with the you know, premiums and discounts conversation first. Okay. So, I offer discounts. I'm certified B corporation. So I do offer discounts to other certified B corporations because we're values aligned and I love that and it's cool and stuff like that. And then I also have a discount for nonprofits. And when I say nonprofits, I'm really talking about smaller nonprofits. I'm not talking about, you know, the global Red Cross, right? So, and I would still offer a large nonprofit a discount, but I wouldn't offer the same kind of discount that I offer to my local women's shelter, right? And, you know, again, I do some pro bono work for organizations like that too. And I can talk about pro bono in a minute, but, you know, be thinking about if you're going to offer a discount, be really conscious about why you're doing it, right? Are you doing it because your values aligned? Are you doing it because this is a way to give back to your community without going broke? What are you getting from that discount? Because you have to get some value out of that in order to offer it, right? And then, you know, there are also some cases that you should be charging a premium. And one of those things is for rush jobs, right? Last year I had a couple of clients come to me and say, oh my gosh, we need to have, you know, these projects completed by the end of the year in order to comply with the new laws that are coming into play in January 1st in California. So there's like, it has to be done by the end of the year. Great. It's November, right? So in order for me to do that, you know, it's going to require me to work like a lot of extra hours in a short amount of time. I'm going to charge them a premium for that. I used to charge a premium for clients that I thought were going to be a pain in the ass. Now I do not work with clients who I think are going to be a pain in the ass, but that is a total legitimate thing. You just don't want a line item, you know, PETA premium of 20%. But you know, if there's some kind of thing about the engagement that, you know, it's a rush, it's, you know, high stakes for whatever reason, you know, consequence of error is way higher, you know, go ahead and charge a premium for that. Mm-hmm. In terms of hourly rates, you know, everybody's got to kind of figure out what they want, you know, from a starting point. And I just use hourly rates as a starting point. I never tell people, you know, my hourly rate's $1,000, right? Because, you know, I talk about it a lot in my book. You don't really want people to do that math in their head because it makes them crazy. But, you know, because a lot of people would not want to sign up for $1,000 an hour, but they would want to sign up for something that's going to get them $150,000 a year extra, right? So you just don't want them to be doing that math in their head, but you need it. You need something to figure out what you're going to charge people for a proposal. So, you know, you can do things like figure out what your hourly rate from a corporate job would be. And, you know, and then multiply it by 1.5 to consider benefits and taxes and stuff. That would be kind of a low rate, in my opinion. You can think about, okay, what's the lowest I could possibly take? Maybe $100 an hour, and then double that. There's a number of different ways to do it. And again, I talk about it in the book a lot, but
yeah.
And there's no correct answer. I mean, some people think, oh, well, if I just have the right answer, then everything's going to work out. And there's not a right answer.
Right.
Right.
There is a comment here too about the prep time. And Kate, you and I have talked about administration. Like right now, for example, I'm working on a very, very large project and I underestimated the amount of administration that it's taking me to manage, because I'm managing multiple consultants in this project as well. So That's something that I know when you talk about making mistakes, as far as, well, that's a learning for me that I underestimated the prep time and administration of this project.
Yeah. And that's a super important thing. You know, it's not just the hours that you spend in front of the client. It's the time that it takes you to do any analysis or any of that kind of stuff. It's the time that you're spending, you know, creating training or, you know, that kind of stuff. That's pretty easy. But then thinking about, okay, well, I have to, you know, write up a summary and send a summary email once a week, or I have to meet with my team on the back end, you know, that kind of stuff. You got to build all of that in. You know, one thing that I'd love to do before we, and I'm happy to stick around a little bit longer too, but I do have a book, and it's that Name Your Price one that, you know, this guy right here. And if you want to, it's available in a lot of places, but if you want a 20% discount on the ebook, I made a special coupon on my website. So if you use ODF 2023, you can get 20% off the ebook if you buy it from my website. It only works on my website. It won't work on like Amazon or whatever, but and it's only for the ebook because I only sell the ebook on my website. But I would love to hear from you. And if you want to stick around, I'll hang out for a little bit longer too, and we can talk. But if you want the ebook at a 20% discount, you can buy it on my website. So
thank you, Kate. Yeah. Really appreciate the time and energy that you've taken and insight that you've had. So we'll hang out here for a little while, but at this point, the session is concluded, and really appreciate your time. And thank you, ODF community, for your engagement as always.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kate.
And if you want to do this again and, you know, look at specific things, you know, we can have a practice sharing kind of thing too. I'm happy to do any of that. So
thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Well, Kate, you might talk about it in your book, but I'm a little curious when you mentioned finding out what the corporate rate for a similar role might be. Mm-hmm. Do you have, like, if you go to Indeed or if you go to different things, is that where you're thinking you pull that information up?
Yeah. Or if you just came from corporate, you know,
Tanya. I actually calculated my income that I was making at my previous
job.
Yeah. And I divided and, you know, figured out what that hourly rate was. And then did what Kate did, multiplied times two. So,
Yeah. You're adding not just your base pay, but your bonuses, your, you know, equity, if you get equity or stock or restricted shares or whatever, you know, make sure you're looking at the whole package and not just, you know, I got paid, you know.
I was just thinking up from the perspective of people who've been doing consulting work for an extended period of time. I support six different people who have their own practices and the range of where they're at. And most of them do it all on an hourly basis. So where, you know, how you come up with that range and to see, are you staying competitive with where the market's going
And there's not the same kind of market pressure, you know, with consulting work because it's so custom. And even executive coaching, you know, ranges wildly. There are people who charge $10,000 an hour for executive coaching, which, you know, would be awesome. I don't charge that, but you know, people who are doing that are typically doing Fortune 10 C-suite folks, right? But you know, salary.com, Indeed, you know, there's Glassdoor, there's all kinds of places. And because New York City Colorado, California, Washington all require that salaries are posted on job postings. We're starting to see a lot more good data in the marketplace, although there's still some slimy companies that do, you know, the range is $30,000 to $200,000 a year, you know, which is, you know, stupid.
There's a good question in here, Kate, from Brandon about inflation. Like, how do you talk about raising prices and inflation?
Yeah. Well, I think we're all used to paying more for things year over year. And inflation has been big. You know, when we just look at actual salary changes over the last couple of years, they've been, you know, pretty significant. So, you know, if you change your prices by, you know, 5% a year, something like that, I don't think anybody blink an eye at it. And you don't have to wait until the new year to change your prices. You can change them anytime you want. You know, I have a girlfriend and I don't know what she's thinking, but she raises her prices every quarter. I think that's nuts, but does it and she gets it and it's fine, you know? So yeah.
Do smaller increments rather than a bigger one on a less
frequent basis. It's so funny because I this is terrible. I'm totally admitting something. I have, like, with the same clients, I have not raised my prices with existing clients. And I know it's something that I need to do. But I haven't done it yet. So that's just true confessions.
I'm there with you. Yep.
Well, let's get you to bump those up.
I know. There is one client when I feel like I'm at rate, but the other ones that I've got are just, yeah. There's one client in particular that I'm like, I need to raise my prices. Yeah.
So Bruce has a great question in here. What are some creative ways people are charging for being my ally and other positive contributions other than money? I think, you know, one of the things that you can do instead of discounting is offer, you know, additional services or additional, you know, something, you know, an added bonus kind of a thing. That's one of the things that I really love to do, even with individual clients. Because I don't love to be in the discount space. So, you know, I might offer somebody, a Colby A index, on top of a package that they're already getting, or I might offer them, you know, an ebook or, you know, a collection of articles or something like that, that is of value to them, or some worksheets or something like that, that wouldn't normally be in my package. And, you know, just saying, hey, you know, you're such a great ally. You know, I wanted to offer you this, you know, this bonus of my favorite worksheets that I use with my clients, or, you know, I wanted you to offer you this bonus of a Hogan assessment, you know, something like that. I don't know. But I think bonuses are a really great way to do things instead of offering discounts.
Bonus services. Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom with us. This has been really, really great.
Thanks. Well, I'm super happy to do it. I, you know, honestly, if one person can take one thing out of this conversation that they don't have to make one of the stupid ass mistakes that I've made, I would consider this wildly successful. So
I already have a few of those. So thank you.
And awesome. I made notes to share with my clients of things to be changing in the way they're doing it. So this was awesome. Very helpful, Kate. Yeah. Thank you.
Terrific.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, everyone. So have a great holiday.
Take care.
Bye.